I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. The 2014 midterm primaries wrapped up last week, with Central Florida voters picking their party nominees for the general election in November, as well as county and local leadership. And while the primary contests were mostly quiet with low voter turnout, the election sets the stage for a noisy general election in November.
We're going to probably have the largest amount of money spent in negative ads in any election in the history of our country.
90.7 political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry join me to talk about midterm elections in Central Florida and other political happenings in the Sunshine State. A preview of the 2014 midterm elections in November, that's coming up on Intersection. I'm joined by 90.7 political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. Dick Batchelor is a former Democratic State House representative. He's the founder and president of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Dick Batchelor, nice to have you back.
Very nice to be back.
And Lou Fry, of course, a former Republican congressman. He is the founder of the Lou Fry Institute for Politics and Government at the University of Central Florida. Lou Fry, nice to see you again.
A pleasure.
Well, let's start. The midterm primaries wrapped up, and no surprises here, but Rick Scott won the Republican nomination very handily, and Charlie Crist, of course, cruising through to win his Democratic nomination. The two, of course, have been running against each other even before the primary. What can we expect now from these two going into November, Lou Fry?
We're going to probably have the largest amount of money spent in negative ads in any election in the history of our country.
That's a bold statement.
Well, it's the facts. Mm-hmm. Just look at what's going on, what they've done so far, and the first ad out or something I saw was pretty tough. Is it going to make a difference to do negative campaigning work? Yeah. Everybody yells about they don't like them, but a lot of times negative campaigning worked. Mm-hmm. Dick and I were talking the other day. You know, one of the people who came out of this thing as a winner on the Democrat side, as a winner on the Democrat side, is Nan Rich. She couldn't win. She knew she couldn't win. She projected herself as a really good, smart woman, good candidate, good legislator. She endorsed him as soon as it was clear that he was going to win. She is a good Democrat falling in line. She also has put herself in a position with the Democrat Party, and both here and nationally, to be someone who is a player now that should be looked at and build on over the period of time. So when all the smoke goes, there's this nice person sitting in the middle of it looking around, and like maybe the Wizard of Oz, there she is. It's you never can tell. And she handled the loss, Dick, really,
yes,
really
she did.
Well.
She did handle
with
it well.
Class.
Well, Dick Batchelor, let me ask you, we can talk a little more about Nan Rich in a few moments, but what about these negative ads? Is there a point at which people say, look, I've had enough?
Well, first of all, I agree with Lou. You're going to see a tremendous amount of money being spent. Keep in mind that Rick Scott spent $78 million of his own money the last time he ran. Whether or not he's prepared to spend that amount of money, I do not know. He's raising a lot of money now. Of course, he's the incumbent governor. But Charlie Crist is raising money, and the good news is people know Charlie Crist and they know Rick Scott. So I think it's going to boil down to – I think the race is going to stay very, very close. Negative ads, negative ads, negative ads. Do they turn people off? To a great degree. In fact, I think some people will be turned off by him and just not vote at all.
Mm-hmm. What about Nan Rich? I mean, do you think there could be a place for her in the administration should Charlie Crist
yes.
win?
If Charlie Crist wins, I think she would be Secretary of the Department of Children and Families.
Okay. And is that something – why do you say that?
I say that because of her background as a member of the House and Senate. She spent a lot of her time focused on children and family issues. And she would be good for that. So that would be no inside baseball, but that's mm-hmm. what my speculation would be, that she would fit right in there.
Mm-hmm. Lou Fry, what are your thoughts? I mean, do you think there's still political life for her down the track, say she does get a seat in the administration
yeah.
there?
Oh, I definitely think not only statewide, but nationally. I would say this, too. One of the problems, and Dick's mentioned over a period of time, is the Democrats don't have much bench strength. Mm-hmm. Even if you're looking down the line, there's, you know, who is going to do it. Obviously, Bill Nelson is not going to do it for the last time. He isn't going to do it. So you can take him off the table. The attorney general race, possible for a candidate out of that. But the legislature, members of the legislature are in such a minority that it really is not a fun position. I've been in that position on the national level. The Democrats mm-hmm. control Congress for something like 50 years. And you can do it, but it's a lot harder and you have to do it on your own. And the parties really become a drag or a detriment to try and get anything done. So
I think the one thing they have to look out for in this race now, the general election for the governor's races too, the amount of money being spent, number one, outside influence, number two. And I think for the first time, the televised debates could make a difference.
That's October 15th.
October 15th. The first one's televised. I think it could make a difference. We'll just have to see. If somebody has a big misstep, it could make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Who do you see standing to lose the most, I guess, from those?
I think the incumbent. I think the governor does. The one thing you got to give to Charlie Crist, he really handles himself extremely well. The governor's not a very – he's not an orator, so it would be it'd be interesting to see.
He makes the Gettysburg Address long.
Right. Lou Pro, what would your advice be to Charlie Crist? If you were on his campaign staff right now and saying, we're getting ready for these debates, what would you say to him?
Right now, I'd go out and I'd solidify my base. I'd go and work with the Democrats around the state and say, look, you know, I've been on other sides, but here it is. You got who out there to help you to build this party and to come back where you become a factor in the legislature? How do we build the Democrat Party? You work with Charlie and build it that way. And you know, he's an affable kind of guy, and he is not all bent out of shape as such with the people. It's funny because he has a great memory. I love baseball, you know, play a little bit and did that kind of thing. I don't think there's been a meeting over the last 40 years where he hasn't brought up the baseball thing, but he's always personalizes that kind of thing. He works hard at campaigning, and I think he likes campaigning.
He's a very good politician.
One of the ground game is going to be important. Lou and I agree the race is going to be close. Get out the vote, get out the vote, get out the vote. The ground game, they're trying to replicate, the Democrats are, what Barack Obama did in 2012. They really are spending a tremendous amount of millions of dollars on a ground game, hiring people, opening offices, going door to door, calling people, and it's going to be who you can get to the polls.
Let me ask you this question, and I guess either gentleman can jump in, but what does Rick Scott do to prepare for these debates?
Well, I think what he's doing now to prepare for the election, he's really reinvented himself. He's now focusing on education. You would think, if you haven't been paying attention, that he's the education governor. What he's doing on the environment, if you haven't been paying attention, you think he's now the environmental governor. So he really has reinvented himself. He's focusing. If you look at the last 6 months, darn close to becoming a Democrat.
he keeps going.
But he's moving in that direction to appeal. Lou always says, and I say too, you know, the left nominates the Democrat, the right nominates the Republicans, then you scurry back to the middle as fast as you can to try to get in the middle. They're both trying to play to the middle.
Yeah, and that's really, when you look at the votes, that's probably 10 or 15% of the people in the state, so there just isn't a lot of people you're playing. That's where the polling comes in. And by the way, when you're saying, what are you going to do for the debate, what you should be doing is going every time you have some time, an hour or two, and being put in a situation. What happens nationally is they usually find somebody who's really bright and articulate, and they play the candidate on the other side. And so you should be – you have plenty of time. You should be well vetted on this thing. There's no excuse for not knowing where who's the president of – Indochina, which was no longer around. But anyway, but I mean, you know, those dirty trick questions.
Sure. Who would be your stand-in for Charlie Crist if you were Rick Scott? Who would you want sort of to be up against in the next couple months?
I really hadn't thought particularly of that. I'd have to think about that. It could very well, you know, with Charlie, who knows? It could be a Republican. And then what do you do? So, but I mean, that's how it really works in the big leagues. Is there's a lot of preparation for it. Nothing happens by accident. You know, if you're supposed to smile at a proper time, you better smile. If you're, you know, if you don't just don't do anything dumb. I mean, there are people. Jerry Ford, who knew where Poland was, answered that question in a way which was somewhat right. And people were saying, "What is that about?" Well, that was the debate with Jimmy Carter, and Ford was coming on. Matter of fact, Ford, if it had been another week or two, he'd have probably won that.
Agree.
And then we wouldn't have had Reagan and everything. You'd get a very interesting philosophical conversation.
So debates can make a big difference. If somebody is more of a misstep than anything else, you won't come out shining. They both come out shining, but they're going to force each other to make a misstep. That's what they're
Nixon's sweating.
Absolutely.
You know, and Nixon was by far the better writer and so forth.
Right. If those debates had been radio debates, it might have been a different proposition.
It was. The numbers showed early on that in the radio things, he was doing good, and Kennedy wasn't doing good.
He went on the radio and lost on TV. It's kind of like Lou and I. We have a face for radio.
Yeah.
you wouldn't be turning down the pancake makeup, though, right?
No,
do they have enough? That's the only question we'd be worried about.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, you mentioned the environment and the fact that Rick Scott, if you look at him without sort of the context, he could almost be running as a Democrat, so to speak. Well, what about the environment? He's remained pretty noncommittal on climate change, despite agreeing to meet with that group of concerned scientists. Does the silence on this hurt his re-election chances, do you think?
I think it does a little bit, but here's the thing. You've got this multi-billionaire who's weighed in. He's agreed to spend $50 million in gubernatorial races, $10 million in Florida, and it's on the climate change. So he's going to be forced to take a position. You can't say, I'm not a scientist, and beg yourself off of that question. And he's also got to come out on the constitutional amendment on the land and water constitutional amendment, which he has not done yet, but he might be forced to take that position. But people do care about the environment.
But do they care enough to make a difference in their voting? Everybody's for the environment.
Everybody's for the environment. You're right. Define that in different ways.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I thought was a good issue statewide, and I turned out to be wrong, was the water issue. When I ran for governor, I thought that was really something that we were going to have a problem with, and sooner or later we'd turn on the faucet and nothing would come out, or salt would, mm-hmm. and that now was the time to catch it before it got bad. Mm-hmm. And everybody's for it, but then you want them to get involved or do something. It just really doesn't happen. I don't know what the issue will be or issues are going to be that are going to drive the 10 or 20% of the people left who haven't made their minds up. I'm not sure. Do you?
Well, I think a couple of things could play a role in this. The marijuana vote, the legalization of medical marijuana, I think could turn out some new voters that maybe not ordinarily would vote. And secondly, the whole gay marriage issue, and that's been kicked to the courts, but now Pam Bondi, the attorney general, has been defending the state law, which is actually unconstitutional. It was a constitutional amendment. So she's out there. She was on the right side in the Republican primary on that issue, but now she's in the general, and you can't be that conservative going into the general on that issue. So mm-hmm. I think those two issues could play a role.
So you're saying that the Pam Bondi, George Sheldon race is going to be quite critical in the gubernatorial race too?
Right, and he only raised about $500,000 in the primary and won handily. She's raised about $2 million. She's the incumbent, but now she'll get more money. But now what will happen is third-party groups, the Democratic Party, the National Democratic Attorney General's Association will give George Sheldon money, so you'll see money coming in. So he'll be able to generate money. Whether or not he can match her, I doubt it, but it'll be an interesting, very interesting Attorney General's race.
Female running for governor of the state? Down, which is the next step, very attractive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lou Fry, how do you rate Sheldon's chances against the incumbent Attorney General?
Well, I think that he has got an incredible background. If you look at what he's done over a period of years, he served with Dick for what I think
eight years,
and so no question of his capabilities. The question is, can he overcome the fact that there are no Democrats statewide except for Nelson and Charlie and whatever his latest thing has been, but where are you going to get the bench strength on this
right.
one?
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is going to be, we keep going back to it, it's going to be turnout. If the Charlie Crist was a strong candidate and is a strong candidate and wins by, I don't care if it's 1 point, but if he wins, he carries some coattails. What you notice in the primary, a lot of people went in the booth and voted for in the governor's race and just left. They didn't vote for anything else. So that's the big fear they've got. How do you get them to vote the whole ticket? Mm-hmm. That's why that ground game is absolutely pivotal.
Bondi has been in the media a lot, too, with issues like human trafficking. She's been very upfront with that. And Sheldon says he's going to focus on medical marijuana, the environment, women's reproductive rights. Are these issues he can take on Bondi in a debate? So, for example, in Wynn, do you think?
He could take her on those kind of issues, and I think to draw a distinction between where he is and where she is philosophically on those issues. But I have to give it to Pam Bondi. She's been, while I might not agree with her philosophically, she's been very, very visible. Keep in mind, she was one of the attorney generals that filed the suit against the Affordable Care Act that went to the Supreme Court. She's also very much involved, and I was in a meeting with her on human trafficking, so she's very much out front on those kind of issues. So I don't think anything she's got.
Some issues appeal more to the conservatives, some more to the liberals.
Mm-hmm.
How big a cloud is it in the medical marijuana issue? If you're for that thing, how many people do you drag with you or not? We don't really know at the moment. We know it's an issue, but we don't know if it really is going to make a difference when it comes down to tallying the votes.
Right, so it'll be an interesting one to watch in November.
Yep. Keep in mind, too, real quickly here, that you've got obviously the pro group that's pushing for the Constitutional Amendment, which requires 6% plus one of the vote, number one. Number two, you've got a vote no on Amendment 2, which is being pushed by Ambassador Assembler and other groups, too. So you've got a pro and con out there. But if you look at the latest poll, 80% plus, including Republican support, medical marijuana.
It's just what kind of medical marijuana
is.
And is it also, I mean, a question of people actually turning up to vote?
Are they going to turn out the vote? I have a very, very quick, funny story. I was supervisor of election talking to him the other day. He said, out in front of the headquarters at supervisor of elections office, every single day is a woman holding a sign, vote no, excuse me, vote yes on two. Well, it's not even on the ballot to November, so maybe that's a constituent basis out there. I don't know.
It's probably the level of interest.
Right. I mean, do you see signs in the low turnout for this election in August as a
last midterm election was something like a 9% turnout, and it's going to be there. But one of the real questions is who's going to stay away. I think that may be as important as who's going to vote. Are the Democrats going to stay away? Are the people, the Republicans, not going to? You know, are they going to change, drift along with Charlie if they won? I'm not sure who's locked in to marching with their leader into the dust, or.
And Charlie's got whether or not he can inspire the Democratic base. Is he a Bob Graham or a Ruben Askew or a Lawton Childs? The answer is no, in all candor. So he can bring the base together. Now, in the primary, low turnout statewide, but he got 75% of the vote. So that's a good endorsement. But in the end, it's going to be Democrats going to be anybody but Scott voting.
Right.
You know, anybody but Scott. So if whether or not they're in love with Charlie Crist or not, I think they're going to vote. But, again, the turnout, the ground game, they better spend $10 million on the ground game because that's the game in the end.
You're listening to Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm speaking to 90.7 political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. You can join the conversation online. You can send us an email, intersection@wmfe.org. We're also on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter at WMFE Orlando. Let's talk about some of the other races in the primary election. U.S. Congressman John Micah, Alan Grayson, rather, Dan Webster, and Congresswoman Corrine Brown sailed through their primaries. Any formidable challenges in this race, or is this a non-contest this term?
No, but the surprise was, I think, a little bit that Micah did so well.
Right.
Because he had to have active opposition from a credible candidate at the time. But John should be the person that all the other guys in the House look at as to how to run a campaign and not as some of them have done and found out that they didn't do too well. By the way, there was one young lady up in the part of the state. I couldn't follow it totally, but I think she got elected in what, she was 21?
So 20, Lake County, 23 years old.
23 years old. Yeah. And I think that's wonderful, personally, that someone that young has got. We teach getting involved and civics and all this kind of thing, and here it is right at work. You know, you can do it. Funny part is she ran the same kind of campaign I did years ago, not sophisticated door-to-door, and just put a list together and call those people. And that's what I did.
Is that the secret sauce for those other folks too, John Micah and co, who just swept through?
Everybody had different approach to it. John's helped with the VA hospital. He's helped with the simulation industry. He's helped with the light rail. I mean, John has been, he's worked at this.
And he's home every weekend and very visible in the community. But go back to those races, all incumbents, well-financed, 95% of incumbents win re-election. None of them have a problem.
What about the redistricting? I mean, Worcester and Brown's district's been ruled unconstitutional, but the election continued as scheduled. Special election in the future for those districts, do you think?
No, I think they'll be 2016, but let me tell you, it's not over. Corrine Brown, in my opinion, is going to file a lawsuit. She wants it back in the courts, and she'll go to the Florida Supreme Court because she wants to hold on to Sanford, which is a big chunk they took out of her district. And she's not very bashful about it. She will litigate to try to get the maps redone again.
Yeah, 2020, it's going to probably be solved.
That's optimistic.
Well, yeah, right. You know, they've been at this for a long, long time, and it's really they did make some changes which are significant.
Well, you know, what you've got to do is you've got to give some credit to the League of Women Voters, Deidre McNabb, and particularly and some others on the getting the Amendment 4 and Amendment 5 passed of the Constitution, which basically directed the legislature to do how to
what
do these districts.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it. So the judge said, you didn't do it. So he came back in and had them redo it. So you got to give them credit for that. If it were not for that oversight and that citizens' initiative, we wouldn't have had them forced back into reapportionment.
And just one thing, the majority and reapportionment comes, will always do better than the minority. Mm-hmm. And there is always politics in it, no matter what anybody says. It's gone on forever. I think it'll be a little better. It's a little harder to get away with it than it was before. But
reapportionment
is slow.
It's much more transparent now than it was 20 years ago. I was on the reapportionment committee as an alternate, and I can tell you without confessing too much of my crime.
20 years
I actually helped draw a district that included my
your own street.
My neighborhood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a congressional district.
Yeah.
You mentioned transparency, Dick Batcher. If I could segue for a moment here, former Orlando Expressway Authority board member Scott Batterson found guilty on two counts of bribery. He was charged with offering $5 million contracts to companies in exchange for the hiring of friends. Surprise to you, that guilty verdict?
Not surprised. In fact, I'm not a lawyer, but his counsel didn't appear too as competent as I would like. Obviously, if you could tell by the outcome, he didn't call any witnesses in the case. But what this says, it goes back to, it might seem like a wide segue, goes back to Mayor Teresa Jacobs. She's the one that was very outspoken. We want transparency. And she was really having to run against some of the influences that are outside. And so they got
that one bump in the road on the...
Yeah, except the texting thing she might have a little problem with. Yeah. But on the Expressway Authority, she was right. It's a sad commentary. It's too bad. I don't know what's going to happen. I know he's going to appeal it, see what happens. But hopefully it's a signal to the new Expressway Authority, which is now the Regional Expressway Authority, that they really have got to be extraordinarily transparent.
Mm-hmm. Lou Fry, talking about dirty politics, the Chris campaign is always it's already making mileage out of that Batterson conviction. I mean, does this have any blowback for Rick Scott?
It could. Obviously, he's there, and it's his, quote, deal that the governor's running, and it could have, although it's so – I personally, you know, I didn't read it. I didn't go. I can't even spell the Expressway Authority correctly. So I had nothing – I could look at it totally objectively, and I just – I haven't any idea. I'm sure that the courts acted the way they should.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you, too, I mean, just coming back to Rick Scott and his campaign, there's a book out now, former Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll. She's written an autobiography, taking some shots at some of the folks in the Republican Party. What kind of impact do you think this could have on the Rick Scott re-election campaign?
Well, they can take a few things out of it and so forth and that, but those things usually don't have any legs. And for someone who's not in a position and got himself in, or herself in some problems, that takes a lot of the heat out of it.
Right.
Jennifer Carroll being on the ticket helped him pick up a small percentage of African-American voters. Being that she's been kicked to the curb, I think there could be a blowback, and he couldn't get those African-American voters again. The question, if I'm one of advisors of Charlie Crist, I'm saying, can we get her to endorse you, Charlie? And if he does that, then it does, there's a play there. But I guarantee you somebody's on the phone to her today to say, would you endorse Charlie Crist?
Sure. Mm-hmm. And matter of fact, not just her, but a lot of people around the state are trying to figure out where to go. Biggest question was, was Charlie going to have enough money or would people run? And I think that's somewhat been answered, no. Charlie's going to continue to raise a significant amount of money, even if he can't write the personal check. And so a lot of people are not putting their money at risk. Their investment is, if not the best in the world, is at least as viable. Mm-hmm. So,
Lou Fry, do you think Rick Scott would have taken some lessons away from the way he went about selecting his running mate last time around and sort of reapplied those lessons to picking his current running mate?
Yeah, that was sort of loosey-goosey in terms of it. I was involved with Charlie in the U.S. Senate appointment.
Sure.
I was one of the ones that was, I think there are five or six in the state that were named, and so I got a little look at how they played that thing. They put everybody's name out, and you read it in the paper or something, and the governor talked to you, which is true, and you're up there, and he went up there and talked fishing, you know, for 20 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. Not really that bad, but he has his own individual style in order to do it. And I think lieutenant governors, I had the first woman, Marilyn Evans Jones, on the ticket as my lieutenant governor. She was the first woman at that position in Florida. So I thought we could take advantage of that. I think it's, looking back, it was a good political move. If we could have gotten that position to be able to use her, she was going to be in charge of the legislature.
You go back into the appointment, obviously, when they were deciding who would be the U.S. senator after Mel Martinez decided to leave early. Of course, Lou was on the short list of that. But keep in mind who he appointed. Charlie Crist appointed his very, very, very good friend, George Lemieux. Mm-hmm. So George Lemieux gets to be a United States senator. And, of course, he doesn't run again. And now George Lemieux is vehemently opposed to Charlie Crist. Ete brute.
Yeah.
I wonder, just coming back to your campaign for governor, I wonder if you were maybe a couple of decades out of step. I mean, do you think in terms of the water issue, people would be more receptive to that as a campaign platform now?
Yeah, but I probably didn't. I just didn't. It was a good issue, and I still think it's a good issue. It's a really key issue in our state. It's going to control development and where we go in the state. And the problem that I had is nobody really wanted to debate me. When you're ahead in the polls, you don't want to debate.
No.
You want to put them off as long as you can and say, okay, we're going to do it on October 15th, and then we'll try and do it again before it's over, as you look at the poll numbers and they go. Mm-hmm. So you know, in one way, you don't even have to look at the polls. Just see who wants to debate and who doesn't. Pretty well tells you where it is.
Mm-hmm. But you know, the water issue, and I think he was way ahead of his time on choosing a female running mate, number one and number two, on the water issue, because if you look today, the Chamber of Commerce under the auspices of MyRegion.com is getting ready to hold a water policy, the shortage of water in Florida, whether it's Okeechobee or own depletion of water resources. So all these years later, we're talking about what? Water shortages.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lou was ahead of his time.
Can I just touch on one final issue real quick, issue close to both of your hearts? Orange and Volusia County voters extended a half-penny sales tax for schools in both those districts. Dick Batchelor, you were pretty instrumental in that campaign in Orange County.
He was the chairman of both of them.
Yeah, the chairman of both campaigns. Lou was my co-chairman in 2002, and passed by 64% of the vote, which we're ecstatic about.
Mm-hmm. Is it a little funny, Lou, to you as somebody looking at this?
I voted six times against the tax thing. I was Dick finally convinced me that are the legitimate issues. They would put them up for everybody to see. They had a list of homes, and we could see how it happened. And I just felt that, and teaching a lot and everything with the schools, that you really needed. Things were falling down around. I mean, it was I figured it was for a Republican to do that twice and to be the chairman of it is, I'm not sure where I'm welcome some of the time. But it was the right thing to do, and there are times when just because the Republicans have been against in the past doesn't mean that something that works, it's legitimate, you couldn't be for and be relatively comfortable that you're going to get your money's worth.
Is this the best way to fund education? I mean, does it seem to you folks that we need to think of more sustainable ways than a half-penny sales tax every 15 years?
Yeah, the legislature. There are no federal dollars, of course, for capital outlay for school construction. The legislature used to have what they call PICO funds, public education capital outlay dollars. They don't spend those anymore. The required local effort is $1.5 million, which is discretionary locally. But that's it. So we have to go. And Orange County had schools falling down. We have a growth in most of the counties are experiencing a declining population school. We picked up 3,000 new students last year, equivalent to three elementary schools. So because of growth and history of schools falling down, we had to go with half a penny.
And that real quickly, too, is we've been working on young people. We'll have about over 5 years, 1 million young people who've taken civics courses and understand it. And hopefully we're going to get more involvement at the level from the people who are in the area, because who knows your schools better than the one that's right down the street.
Right, absolutely. And higher voter turnout, I guess, down the track.
Yep. Absolutely.
I've been speaking to 90.7 political commentators Lou Fry and Dick Batchelor. Lou Fry, former Republican congressman, founder of the Lou Fry Institute for Politics and Government at UCF. Thanks for coming in, Lou.
Always a pleasure.
And also Dick Batchelor, former Democratic State House Representative, founder and president of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Thank you very much, Dick.
As Rep Butler would say, my pleasure.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. Production assistance for this week's show from Amy Green. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.